And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's February 28th. It is the 59th day of the year. 306 days remain till the year is over with. It's the last day of February in common years and the penultimate day of February in leap years. And it's the last day of the meteorological winter in Northern Hemisphere in common years. Well, this is not a leap year. So, we are looking at this being the last day of February. On this day in 202 BC, Liu Bang is enthroned as Emperor of China. Begins 4 centuries of rule by the Han Dynasty. In 870 AD, the Fourth Council of Constantinople closes. The Council of Constantinople is the 8th Ecumenical Council of the Catholic Church, held in Constantinople from October 5th, 869 to February 28th, 870. Very poorly attended. First session by only 12 bishops, a number of bishops later never exceeded 103. Now this is in contrast to the Pro-Photian Council of 879-80, which was attended by 383 bishops. Council met in 10 sessions from October 869 to February 870 and issued 27 canons. They were speaking for God by a majority vote, of course. 1525, the Aztec king, Jehotepec, is executed on the order of the conquistador Hernan Cortez. He was promised that if he filled a room as high as he could reach with gold, he'd be released. The gold came, a river of it. But Cortez was afraid the Aztec king would rally his troops, so had him executed. Kept the gold, too. 1638, the Scottish National Covenant is signed in Edinburgh. 1835, Elias Lenon Rot signed and dated the first version of the Kalevala, the so-called foreword to the old Kalevala. Now, for those who are not familiar with it, as I was not, what the Kalevala is, it's a 19th century work of epic poetry compiled from Karelian and Finnish oral folklore and mythology. It tells an epic story about the creation of the earth. Describes the controversies and retaliatory voyages between peoples of the land of Kalevala and the land of Pohjola, and their various protagonists and antagonists, as well as the construction and robbery of the mythical wealth-making machine Sampo. It's regarded as the national epic of Karelia and Finland. Must have had a very good PR person. 1922, the UK ends its protectorate over Egypt through a unilateral declaration of independence. 1925, the Charlevo and Kamouraska earthquake strikes northeastern North America. 1947, February 28th incident in Taiwan, civil disorder is put down with the loss of about 30,000 civilians. Oh, what the hell, where they came from. In 1948, Christiansborg crossroads shooting in the Gold Coast. That took place when a British police officer opened fires on the march of ex-servicemen. Kills 3, sparks major riots and looting in Accra. 1953, James Watson and Francis Crick announced to friends that they've determined the chemical structure of DMA. DNA, I can't talk. The formal announcement takes place April 25th following a publication in April's Nature, which was actually published in Nature on April 2nd. 1958, a school bus in Floyd County, Kentucky hits a wrecker truck and plunges down an embankment into the rain-swollen Lavisa Fork River. The driver and 26 children die in what remains one of the worst school bus accidents in U.S. history. 1959, Discoverer 1, an American spy satellite that's the first object intended to achieve a polar orbit, is launched but fails to achieve orbit. That's because the Black Knight was already there. 1966, a NASA T-38 Talon crashes into the McDonnell aircraft factory while attempting a poor visibility landing at Lambert Fields in St. Louis. Kills astronauts Elliot C. and Charles Bassett. 1972, China and the U.S. Relations. U.S. and China signed the Shanghai Communique. 1975, in London, an underground train fails to stop at Moorgate Terminus Station and crashes into the end of the tunnel. Kills 43 people. 1980, Andalusia approves its statute of autonomy through a referendum. 1983, the final episode of MASH airs with almost 106 million viewers. Still holds the record for the highest viewership of a season finale. That's when you find out that Hot Lips and Hawkeye don't get together. 1985, Provisional Irish Republican Army carries out a mortar attack on the Royal Ulster Constabulary Police Station at Newry. Kills 9 officers and the highest loss of life for the Royal Ulster Constabulary on a single day. 1986, Olof Palme, 26th Prime Minister of Sweden, is assassinated in Stockholm. 1991, the first Gulf War ends. 1993, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms agents raid the Branch Davidian Church in Waco, Texas. They have a warrant to arrest the group's leader, David Koresh. 4 ATF agents and 6 Davidians die in the initial raid, which starts a 51-day standoff. 1995, former Australian Liberal Party leader John Hewson resigns from the Australian Parliament almost 2 years after losing the 1993 Australian federal election. 1997, an earthquake in northern Iran is responsible for about 3,000 deaths. 1997, GRB 970228, a highly luminous flash of gamma rays, strikes the Earth for 80 seconds, providing early evidence that gamma ray bursts occur well beyond the Milky Way. 1997, a Turkish military memorandum results in the collapse of the government in Turkey. 2001, the 2001 Nisqually earthquake, having a moment magnitude of 6.8 with an epicenter in the South Puget Sound, damages the Seattle metropolitan area. Not near as bad as Antifa's doing. 2002, during the religious violence in Gujarat, 97 people were killed in the Naroda Patiya massacre and 69 in the Gulbarg Society massacre. 2004, over 1 million Taiwanese participate in a 228-hand-in-hand rally. They form a 500-kilometer, that's 310-mile-long, human chain to commemorate the February 28 incident in 1947. Excuse me. Don't know why I'm sneezing. The February 28th incident, for those who are not familiar with it, was an anti-government uprising in Taiwan that was violently suppressed by Governor Chen Yi of the Kuomintang-led Republic of China government. It resulted in the deaths of thousands of civilians. The number of Taiwanese deaths from the incident and the massacre is estimated to be between 18 and 28,000. The massacre marked the beginning of what was called the White Terror, in which tens of thousands of other Taiwanese went missing, died, or were imprisoned. This incident, one of the most important events in Taiwan's modern history, was a critical impetus for the Taiwan independence movement. Alrighty, let's see what else. 2005, a suicide bombing at a police recruiting center in Al-Hilla in Iraq kills 127. 2013, Pope Benedict XVI resigns as the Pope of the Catholic Church, becoming the first Pope to do so since Pope Gregory XII in 1415, which just goes to show you, being Pope doesn't make you absolutely correct all the time. You may think you are. All right, a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances, Christian feast days, February 28th is the Eastern Orthodox liturgics. All right, that is it for that. Let's see, what else do we have? Okay. 364, Valentinian I becomes Roman Emperor. He ruled till 375. 1570, an anti-Portuguese uprising in Ternate, Molucas. 1638, Scottish Presbyterians signed the National Convent in Greyfriars in Edinburgh. 1646, Roger Scott went on trial in Massachusetts for daring to sleep in the church. 1653, saw the three-day sea battle where the English beat the Dutch. 1667, the English colony Suriname comes under Dutch controls. 1700, the days followed by March 1st in Sweden, creates the Swedish calendar. The, let's see what else. There's, like, system just switched to a security camera. Let's see what it's upset about. Nothing. All righty. Back to what we were doing. The Frenchman Elias Niao opens a school for blacks in New York City. All right. 1704, Indians attack Deerfield, Massachusetts. They kill 40 and they kidnap 100. 1708, a slave revolt in Newton, Long Island, New York, results in 11 deaths. 1710, in the Battle of Helsingborg, 14,000 Dutch invaders under Jorgen Rotzow are decisively defeated by an equally sized Swedish force under Magnus Stenbock. 1730, Tsarina Anna Ivanovna leads autocracy. 1749, the first edition of Henry Fielding's novel Tom Jones is published on this date. 1759, Pope Clement XIII did something that horrified his followers. He allowed the Bible to be translated into various languages. 1778, Rhode Island General Assembly authorizes the enlistment of slaves into the military. 1784, John Wesley charters the Methodist Church. 1787, the charter establishing the institution that became known as University of Pittsburgh is granted. 1794, the U.S. Senate voids Pennsylvania's election of Abraham Gallatin. 1804, Charles Pichegru, French Army general and royalist who plotted overthrow Napoleon in the Pichegru conspiracy, is arrested. On this day in 1810, the first U.S. fire insurance joint stock company is organized in Philadelphia. 1826, Biela's comets rediscovered by Austrian astronomer Wilhelm von Biela. It was originally discovered in 1772, but then it got lost. 1827, the first commercial railroad in the U.S. to Baltimore and Ohio is chartered. 1832, Charles Darwin, on board the HMS Beagle, arrives in the town of Salvador in the Brazilian state of Bahia. 1838, Robert Nelson, leader of the Patriots, proclaims independence of Lower Canada, what's today known as Quebec. 1844, a 12-inch gun on board the USS Princeton explodes, killing Secretary of State Abel Upshur, Secretary of the Navy Thomas Gilmer, and other high-ranking U.S. federal officials. 1847, U.S. defeats Mexico in the Battle of Sacramento. On this date in 1849, the first boatload of gold rush prospectors arrive in San Francisco from the East Coast. 1850, the University of Utah opens in Salt Lake City, Utah. 1854, the Republican Party is formally organized in Ripon, Wisconsin. 1859, Arkansas legislature requires free blacks to choose either going into exile or becoming slaves again. 1862, Charles Gounod's opera La Reine de Saba premieres in Paris. 1863, the Confederate raider Nashville sinks near Fort McAllister in Georgia. 1864, on this date, was the skirmish in Albemarle County, Virginia, also known as Burton's Ford. 1864, the raid at Kilpatrick's in Richmond. The 1870, the Bulgarian Exarchate Orthodox Church is established by decree of Sultan Abd ul-Aziz, the Ottoman Empire. 1871, the Second Enforcement Act gives federal control of congressional elections in the U.S. 1878, Congress overrides President Rutherford B. Hayes's veto of the Bland-Allison Act, requiring the Treasury to buy a certain amount of silver and put it into circulation of silver dollars. 1878, Congress authorizes large-size silver certificate. I had one of those until someone stole it. 1879, an exodus of 1879, Southern blacks flee political and economic exploitation. 1882, the first U.S. college carpenter store opens at Harvard. 1883, the first U.S. vaudeville theater opens in Boston. 1888, the ferry in San Pablo Bay explodes. 1893, Edward Acheson of Pennsylvania patents an abrasive he names carborundum. It's also known as silicon carbide. 1896, France dismisses Queen Rana Valona of Madagascar. Now, today in 1900, General Buller's troops relieved Ladysmith and Natal. It was under siege for quite some time. The 1903, Barney Dreyfus and James Potter buy the Philadelphia Phillies for the unbelievable price of $170,000. In 1908, it was a failed assassination attempt on Shah Muhammad Ali in Tehran. 1914, construction began on what was called the Tower of Jewels for the San Francisco Exposition. 1915, World War I, after the French tried to drive the Germans back into the Champagne region, they gained a few hundred yards. It only cost 50,000 casualties. 1917, the AP issued a report that Mexico and Japan will ally with Germany if the U.S. enters World War I. 1924, U.S. begins intervention in Honduras. 1925, Congress authorizes a special handling stamp. 1933, on this date, saw the first female enter the U.S. cabinet. Name was Frances Perkins, who was appointed Secretary of Labor. The 1933, on Adolf Hitler's advice, German President Paul von Hindenburg signs the Reichstag fire decree after the building is destroyed by fire. And this eliminates a lot of civil liberties in Germany. 1933, after the issuance of the Reichstag fire decree, German Communist Party is essentially outlawed, though not formally banned, after the German government blames the communists for burning down the Reichstag building. If I remember my history, apparently it was done by a mentally challenged individual who was put up to it by Nazis. 1933, pacifist and anti-fascist writer Carl von Ossietzky, arrested, sent to Esterwegen-Papenburg concentration camp. 1935, the Amsterdam Hotel of the Red Lion gets a sidewalk permit. 1935, Wallace Carruthers manufactures the first nylon polymer. 1935, the Ladby ship is discovered within a Viking grave on the island of Funen in Denmark by amateur archaeologist Paul Helig Mikkelsen. 1939, Great Britain formally recognized Francisco Franco's regime in Spain. The 1939 first issue of the Serbian weekly magazine Politkin, Zabavnik, is published. 1939, the erroneous word Dord, D-O-R-D, is discovered in the Webster's New International Dictionary, second edition, which prompted an international investigation. 1941, there was a British-Italian dogfight above Albania. 1942 was the first weapons drop on the Netherlands. 1942, the Japanese land in Java, the last Allied bastion in the Dutch East Indies. 1944 saw the arrest of the Ten Boom family in Nazi-occupied Netherlands as a result of a Dutch collaborator ratting them out on charges of hiding Jews. 1947, I talked about the February 28th massacre, an anti-government uprising in Taiwan put down by Chiang Kai-shek and his Kuomintang-led Republic of China. 1951, the Senate Committee reports of at least two major U.S. crime syndicates. 1961, JFK names Henry Kissinger a special advisor. I think we have probably come to the end of our history segment. You know, there are those that like this segment, there are those that do not. But as long as I've got people who like to hear various high points in history, I'm going to keep doing it. We've been talking about true stories of real time travelers. We were talking about the when U.S. troops first went into Afghanistan, they found a Vermana, or time travel craft. It was found in a cave. And a lot of soldiers that went in to get it disappeared. Now, from the ancient accounts found in the Sanskrit epic, the Mahabharata, we know a Vimana measured 12 cubits in circumference with four strong wheels. And apart from its blazing missile, the Mahabharata records the use of its other deadly weapons that operated as a result of a circular reflector. When switched on, according to the ancient stories, it produced a shaft of light which, when focused on any target, immediately consumed it with its power. Now, in the ancient Mahabharata texts, there are references to battle planes that were used it fired missiles using sound to find their target and beams of light that destroy anything they touch with their energy. The time well, that encased the Vermana appears to be an electromagnetic radiation gravity field first postulated by Albert Einstein as the unified field theory and long rumored to be behind the infamous American World War II experiment in teleportation known as the Philadelphia experiment that supposedly took place in 1943. And like the events occurring in Afghanistan today, it also caused the sudden disappearance of U.S. soldiers. Now, many believe that the seemingly perpetual power source of these time wells appears to have been utilized by Edward Leedskillen, who claimed to have discovered the secret knowledge of the ancients, and from 1923 to 1951 single-handedly carved over 1,100 tons of coral rock by an unknown process and created one of the world's most mysterious accomplishments known as the Coral Castle. Now, it's a remarkable stone structure built by a Latvian recluse. As I said, his name is Edward Leedskillen near Homestead, Florida. The structure comprises megalithic limestone and coral stones. He worked alone without machinery for 28 years to complete the work, which consisted of about 1,100 tons of rock. On average, the weight of a single block used in the Coral Castle was greater than those used to build the Great Pyramid. Within his castle walls, built of coral blocks weighing approximately 15 tons each, he had a 22-ton obelisk, a 22-ton moon block, and a 23-ton Jupiter block, a Saturn block, a 9-ton gate, a rocking chair that weighed 3 tons, and a number of other secrets. So the question becomes, what was his secret? How did he do it? Is it possible for a 5-foot-tall, 110-pound man to accomplish such a feat without knowing techniques that are uncommon in our contemporary understanding of physics and mechanics? Well, the only tool he ever talked about was a perpetual motion holder. Now, he received attention not only from engineers and technologists, but also from the U.S. government. They paid him a visit, hoping to find out his secret. And, of course, he received them very politely and left none the wiser. In 1952, ill and on his last legs, he checked himself into the hospital, and there he died, taking his secret with him. Well, when the U.S. troops got to Baghdad, what was the first thing they did? Well, according to many observers, they went to the museum, and they allegedly removed from the museum ancient artifacts used supposedly by aliens. As soon as the invasion of Baghdad began, the museum was secured by U.S. troops. It was looted while the guards stood at the door. Worst part of the looting took place 4 levels below ground in vaults that had multiple layers of security, which were apparently opened only with the use of codes and keys. Secret safes contained mysterious objects from the dawn of our civilization, items that had then allegedly vanished under the cover of gunfire and the watchful guard of soldiers surrounding the museum. Now, this story certainly gives credence to the idea Saddam Hussein had something the government of the U.S. wanted in that museum. Some conspiracy theorists believe the artifacts were time technology weapons of war that extraterrestrials didn't want us to have. They say the aliens warned the U.S. government on numerous occasions to turn over what they had taken. Failing to do so, the Fort Worth Armory and anything inside is gone. NASA Aviation Systems Division, located on a remote section of the giant Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport and responsible for engineering the software needed to control the airspace over North America, suffered a nearly half-hour-long sustained attack that resulted in the deaths of U.S. military and space contractors working on the Vermana technology in 2011. According to the scenario, the U.S. government obtains intelligence that hidden somewhere in central Iraq is an actual stargate put there by the Anunnaki, the gods of the ancient Sumerians. In this scenario, when Nibiru, the alleged 12th planet, is closest to Earth, the Anunnaki would take the opportunity to travel to Earth through the same stargate and set up their encampment in Iraq. Well, with time running out, President Bush invaded Iraq. American scientists raided the Iraqi National Museum and closed the stargate, which made the world safe for the New World Order. According to Dr. Michael Sala, that's exactly what took place. Now, Sala is a PhD, an Australian national, and a former lecturer at American University in D.C. His Iraq Stargate theory is that the U.S., Russia, Germany, and France have been aware the Anunnaki left behind some very high-tech apparatus and possibly weapons, when they abandoned Earth around 1700 BC. And Saddam Hussein had been getting assistance from Russian, German, and French archaeological teams for years in an attempt to unravel and maybe reverse engineer this apparatus, which Saleh claims is probably far in advance of any technology we have. Well, he's not the only educator who has claims to make. Lecturer and author Jason Offutt claims he owns a time machine. And he said, this isn't something you hear every day, but it's true. I teach at a university, and one of the great things about the job is that not only is it okay to own things like a time machine, it's somehow expected. And the scientists now brought our time machine through a grant. According to the background, in 1981, Stephen Gibbs, a farmer from Clearwater, Nebraska, got an interesting message from himself. The new Stephen Gibbs was apparently from another dimension. He had a diagram for a time machine called the Sonic Resonator, which he gave to our dimension, Stephen Gibbs. After building and testing the device, our dimension's Gibbs, who now lives in Linden, Kansas, improved on the device and renamed it the Hyperdimensional Resonator, which he began to sell as a time machine, astral projection generator, and a healing device. According to Patricia Griffin Riss, author of the book Dangerous Information, The Further Time Travel Experiments and Studies of Stephen Gibbs, she met him in 1989. She invited him to bring his device to her home in Omaha, Nebraska. And what she experienced made her realize that something was really odd about the Gibbs device. When he turned it on, clouds formed in the room and sparks danced around the chandelier. And though no one time traveled, the experience changed her life, she said. Next time she saw her favorite movie, Shane, something was wrong. Dialogue she memorized was altered or spoken by different characters. Same movie, but totally different. She said, it scared me to death. If you asked me to see the movie Shane, I'd say no thanks. She thinks the Gibbs device somehow altered her reality. Now, testimonials from HDR users include trips to the past and the future. Some travelers have claimed to have returned with objects from the past, but the objects have a short shelf life. People using the resonator reported going a few years into the future of past, being transported to Venezuela, dropped on board a UFO, and been thrown into a parallel dimension. The key to this type of travel, according to Gibbs, is to activate the device over a place of great power, such as a ley line or a vortex. And this is all pretty impressive for a man who never studied physics. This guy, in every way, is an average farmer. And now, all of a sudden, there's this average farmer studying quantum physics. Offutt's friend, Craig Miller, had no problem buying a unit from Gibbs. In fact, at one time, he was selling them on the internet. He said, although the radio interviews I've heard of Gibbs's machine had intrigued me for a couple of years, Miller's stories are what made me want to try it, he said. After buying his first machine, Miller discovered the device doesn't work like time machines do in the movie. He said you have to use it a lot to build up like a resonance. He thinks the device tunes the human body to a frequency where strange things happen. He said, I've talked to other consistent users who said it increases your psychic abilities and makes you feel more spiritual. And just like Gibbs said, the device seems to work best over a place of great energy. If we're going to give credence to these people's claims, then what has to occur is that after using the device enough, it raises your personal frequency and use it over a natural earth vortex and you're able to traverse the vortex to another reality or time. Well, another user warned Miller to focus on the details. He and Gibbs both said, pay attention to everything in your house just before using the machine and afterwards, because I would start to notice something either missing after using it or something new was there. The hyperdimensional resonator is a small box. It has dials and ports for the time coil and electromagnetic, and there are three small switches. To program it for time travel, dial the day, month, and the year desired, although there are only two dials, and they both go to 10. Now, according to a number of people, the directions are confusing and a bit frightening. You have to put a quartz crystal and some of his DNA into a hole called a witness well. Now, that's spit or hair, not blood. Wrap a coiled electric cord around his head, put a strong electromagnet between his legs, and rub a finger on the flat plate in front of the machine. One witness said he sat in his office chair, rubbing his index finger in circles on the time machine. As electricity whirled around his head and a heavy electromagnetic magnet wedged between his legs hummed like it was alive. Unfortunately, he said his patience level was something similar to a toddler, and he didn't use it enough to change his frequency. He said he didn't travel in time. He was a bit lightheaded after the first time he used it, though. And although it didn't work for him, he said, it did do something odd to his friend, and other users reported many cases of physical travel. Now, there's a list of people claimed of time travel with this machine built by Stephen Gibbs, one of whom is called Professor Oppmer, who's said he'd managed to time travel 10 years backward and forward. Interestingly, there's a post about this professor on the Internet. So why is it that we don't have time machines in the local convenience store? Well, perhaps because times have changed. In 2001, before he bought the Resonator, a friend who was an old engineer told him a story. He said he was in college back in the 50s and noticed his physics professor was gone. Went by the professor's house and was told he's retired. And then the professor told him a story. He said he'd been doing research on electrogravitics, getting a small ball to levitate, and the government beat him up and burned down his lab. So he tried something less controversial, creating a 200-mile-per-gallon car. Well, some oil exec pulled up in a black car and handed him a briefcase with $1 million and told him to retire. So that's why we don't have flying cars or 200-mile-per-gallon cars, because the elite would have to take a financial hit. Well, the individual telling the story didn't believe it until 2004 when there were police cars outside his house and a helicopter overhead because he took pictures of an electromagnet. That's when he realized it was all true. Well, let's go to London and talk about a time travel secret that's found in a cemetery there. It's located in London's borough of Kensington and Chelsea. It's Brompton Cemetery, arguably one of the most stunning Victorian cemeteries in the world. Covers about 40 acres and houses more than 35,000 monuments, which mark the resting place of more than 205,000 burials. Ornate marble headstones, exquisite designed mausoleums, and finely carved statues abound everywhere in this cemetery and attract a lot of tourists from some of the most famous graves in the world, including Karl Marx. Well, hidden by the trees in Brompton Cemetery is a strange, imposing structure carved with elaborate Egyptian-like figures. It's been exciting the interest of writers and researchers for years. This 150-year-old mausoleum is the only one in the sprawling cemetery for which no plan can be found. And the key has vanished. And its occupants are a mysterious trio of spinsters about whom almost nothing is known. Well, intrigued by this unusual tomb, writer Howard Webster began researching its origins and now believes the 7-meter-tall building was a time machine built by maverick Victorian genius Samuel Warner, who also invented the first torpedo. Now, Warner is buried in an unmarked grave about 21 meters away from his creation, and in another nearby grave lies his collaborator, renowned architect and Egyptologist by the name of Joseph Bonamy. Now, Warner apparently died in poverty, despite claiming to have invented a sea mine the size of a duck egg and an aerial bomb, which he called the Long Range, that could be dropped from balloons onto naval targets. The inventor even demonstrated his weapons, blowing up ships to the amazement of government officials who hoped to buy the plans. Well, Parliament records confirm this, because records of the time show the Duke of Wellington, Commander-in-Chief of Britain's Armed Forces, was involved in the negotiations to purchase the plans. Warner was demanding £400,000, which is about £14 million at today's prices for his design, and the talks eventually collapsed in acrimony. The cause of Warner's death isn't known, but the writer Webster is convinced he was killed to prevent the plans of his weapons, which were never found, from falling into enemy hands. Belief is he was murdered because they couldn't remote detonate in 1948. No other way to do it but to use a torpedo, according to Webster. Then he was dead within 6 months. Now, Webster's interest in the mausoleum was aroused when he visited a cemetery researching an unrelated film project. The austerity of the structure is startling amid the rows of elaborately carved angels and stone lilies. The trapezoid of dark polished granites decorated with narrow bands of carved hieroglyphics has an enormous bronze door for which there is no key that can be found. In fact, that door hadn't been opened in more than 120 years. You know, according to Webster, every time we find out something new about this structure, the mystery gets more and more intriguing. He believes the wealthy Cortori spinsters, an unmarried mother and her two daughters, financed Warner's time machine, which he developed with Bonami's help. Bonami is part of the team that first deciphered hieroglyphic text found on a papyri in Egypt's Valley of the Kings. Could be that some of the papyri the archaeologists decoded dealt with time travel. That's according to James McKay, a spokesman at Brompton Cemetery. Belief that the ancient Egyptians had uncovered the secret of time travel is widespread in Victorian times and still has adherents to today. Many of the women wanted to cheat death and travel to the future. Maybe they felt no one would suspect that a building in an isolated corner of a graveyard could be an experimental doorway through time. Curiously, after death, they vanished as surely from the face of the earth as they stepped out of this area and into another. There's almost no trace of the Qatar spinsters. They left no will or any other records of their existence, even though the opulence of the tomb suggests they were immensely wealthy. If Warner did indeed believe he was building a time machine, his choice of the cemetery is a shrewd and appropriate one. It's one of the few places where somebody could work unobserved and where even the most eccentric of structures could be explained away. That's according to a cemetery spokesman. Cemetery where the wealthy and famous are buried is also a location that one could say with great certainty is unlikely to be the subject of redevelopment over time. Somewhere, like Egyptian tombs, where structures remain intact over centuries. According to Webster, he wants to believe Warner is not the body in the unmarked grave, but that he's still alive and traveling through time in his machine. As with many other tales, there's an added theory the tomb is just one of five teleportation chambers designed by Joseph Bonami and built by Warner. Certainly that's well within the possibility of reality. Seems likely that as years of this new century progress, time travel ability to be disclosed and utilized even more than it probably already has been from the revelations of many whistleblowers and scientists. You know, the interesting belief of many people is that time isn't fixed. What happens when time stands still? We have a story about that in the Bible. How about if it goes backward? Goes missing, or maybe it even ceases altogether? Well, there are a number of accounts of people who have experienced things like this. Now, the fascinating thing is those that poo-poo it don't investigate it. You know, in our reality, time is linear. We never lived in anything but the present. We have a past that seems immutable and a future that's uncertain. But we've got ample evidence that people do step out of linear time. Spontaneous, unexpected events happen when the doors of time open and individuals suddenly find themselves in a landscape that belongs in another time. Now, these are not experiences of retrocognition, a psychic seeing into the past, or precognition, a psychic seeing into the future, but actual transports into temporal displacement of time. You might call them time slips, time warps, or some other esoteric term. But they're bewildering, to say the least, and terrifying to say the worst. Those who've returned have interesting stories to tell. But how about those that don't return? It does appear it's possible to become lost in time. And we've been exploring the mysteries of time for millennia. Despite our living in linear time, which constantly leads forward, not backward, our ancient myths and folklore deals with quirks and irregularities in time. In the Hindu epic, the Mahabharata, written 400 BC, there was a king by the name of Kakudmi, who ruled an advanced underwater domain. He was convinced there were no men worthy enough to marry his daughter. So he took her to Brahmaloka, the home of Brahma, to ask the gods' advice. Now they had to wait to see Brahma, and when they were finally admitted to an audience, they were astonished to learn everybody that left behind in her kingdom was dead. They went another stream of time. Brahma explained that time passes differently in different planes of existence. Now, the daughter made out okay. Brahma married her to Krishna's twin brother. Similar, according to Celtic fairy lore, time passes slowly in the fairy realm, which is a world of perpetual twilight. Humans who unfortunately venture down a fairy mound usually become trapped and never return. And the few that do return find that many years have passed in the mortal realm, while only a few days passed in the fairy realm. Excuse me. Also, in mystical traditions, linear time doesn't exist. All things happen in the ever-present now. In contrast, Isaac Newton, born in the late Renaissance, proclaimed time to be absolute. I don't know what's wrong. Several centuries went by before Albert Einstein arrived at the same conclusion as the mystics in that past, present, and future all exist simultaneously. And time is relative rather than absolute. For example, people traveling in a spaceship at the speed of light would age much more slowly than people on Earth. Einstein also suggested that the higher a person lives above sea level, the faster he'll age. Particularly bad news for those who like to live up in the mountains. Regardless of the relativity or reality of time, we need a linear time in order to have a world with meaning. In Greek mythology, time itself is personified by the god Kronos, an old, stoop, gray-bearded man who governs events and makes sure they happen one after another in linear fashion. Otherwise, life would be a jumble of confusing events. And how could he organize himself without timekeeping? For this reason, disturbances in the fabric of time are deeply unsettling, and such themes have been well explored in science fiction and on shows such as Rod Serling's Twilight Zone and Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek. Now, we've grappled with the idea of intentional time travel, sometimes with the idea of changing circumstances to avoid an undesirable event. The question is it possible to do this, or would we alter events so that the world we left no longer exists? Storytellers and scientists have pondered the mechanics of time travel. Would it require a vehicle such as the one built by the anonymous time traveler in H.G. Wells' 1895 classic The Time Machine, or the modified DeLorean car in the 1985 hit film Back to the Future? Would it require the intervention of a supernatural entity such as an angel or the ghost of Christmases in Charles Dickens' 1843 Christmas Carol? Or could we simply will ourselves to travel? Well, in the real accounts that have been recorded throughout history, the time-space displacement happens spontaneously. For example, in 12th century England, the villagers in a tiny wool pit in Suffolk were shocked to find two bewildered and frightened children, a boy and a girl, in one of their wolf trap pits. They were green-skinned and couldn't speak any known language. Villagers didn't know where they came from or what to do with them. When offered food, they would only eat beans. Short time, the boy became sick and died, but the girl survived, learned English, and lived out her life among the English. She sits in, the boy came from a land lit by perpetual light like sunset. They were out tending their flocks when they encountered a cave and heard the sound of bells. They followed the sounds and came out the mouth of the cavern, and they were immediately struck senseless by the brilliant, intense light of the earthly sun and the heavy temperature of the air. They lay unable to move for a long time and unable to flee when the people arrived. Now, the villagers investigated, but they weren't able to find the mysterious cavern or opening that linked the world, the land above, to the world of the green children, which was called the land below. In local interpretation, the children regarded as fairies that somehow gotten transported from the fairy realm below the surface of the earth. And since time moves differently in the fairy realm, we can believe the children are teleported through time and space. Their portal, if you will, was the mysterious cavern. One can only wonder what the Pharisee left behind thought of the mysterious disappearance. Now, it's interesting to note that following World War II, there was an explosion of reported cases of time travel and teleportation, along with the reports of UFOs and a spiked interest in the paranormal. So what would account for this? Some believe the dropping of the atom bombs on Japan in 1945 ripped a hole in the Earth's space-time continuum through which UFOs and ghosts and cryptids and mysterious entities, aliens, spirits of all kinds, and doorways to parallel worlds now pour into our reality. For better or worse, it would seem. Some of the increasing cases may be accounted for by the proliferation of media reports, which, of course, encourage more reports. But we can't lay blame for all this at the feet of the media. Other factors have changed our reality, not just the bombs dropped on Japan. Nuclear bomb testing has gone on around the world since then. 2017, North Korea detonated a hydrogen bomb, causing a 6.3 magnitude earthquake and possibly a cave-in at the test site. The Earth has a physical integrity and a sophisticated web of energy frequencies. Shattering the planet with bomb detonation surely has fractured pieces of the web. And in addition, we've advances in technology that bend or have the potential to bend the space-time fabric. Most significant is the Large Hadron Collider, which went into operation at Switzerland in September 2008. But one thing is certain. We can't, however how they might get open, we can't close these mysterious changes or openings in space-time. And their very existence has altered our reality. But in spite of all that, we're still governed by linear time, can only move forward, and hope to avoid some time-space catastrophe. And our personal experiences are contributing to change as well, piece by piece adding to the collective that will shift things significantly when some critical mass factor is reached. Space-time reality of our descendants is likely to be vastly different than the one we live in today. Now, there are six events that we'll be discussing. First is time slips, which features experience of spontaneous time relocation. Prominent psychical and paranormal researchers examined various explanations over the years. But only one explanation fits to a number of these cases. The people involved experienced an aberration of time. Brad Steiger, who's a writer I follow quite often, discusses the idea that some ghost encounters actually may be time slip experiences. And the ghost is just as surprised as we are. Here's a story that is told about a man who visited went to their estate in Wilmington, Delaware, former home of Henry Francis DuPont. Took a tour of the mansion, and as he always does on tour, he asked the guide about ghosts. And she related an interesting story that happened to a staff member who was closing up for the night. She was alone at the time. When she exited one of the rooms, she was surprised to see two figures, a man and a woman, standing in the hallway having an animated but silent conversation. They were dressed in clothing from the mid-20th century. As she stared at him in total amazement, they turned and looked at her, and both reacted in fright. They turned and ran into a nearby room. Well, surprised herself, the staff person didn't know what to do. She thought she might be other staff people unknown to her for some reason in costume. And while she debated what to do, the two figures peeked around the doorway and saw her still standing there, and they jumped back in fright and into the room. Gathering her courage, she walked down to the other room, looked inside. It was empty. No other way out. For a period of 2 minutes, two time periods may have come together with the parties in both eras left with an eerie experience. And in the various stories that we're going to be talking about, certain phenomena seem to accompany time slips. Sudden change of environment from one to one unfamiliar to the percipient. Pronounced feeling of unease or depression. A weird silence. No bird or animal sounds. No commonplace background noises. An atmosphere that seems to be still or dead. Sometimes sudden changes in the weather, including storms and fog and mist and missing time. You know, time travel mechanics provides discussion of the physics of time travel and how it may be undertaken. I mean, there are certain paradoxes that have to be overcome, such as the grandfather paradox. According to that scenario, what would happen if a person went back in time to kill his grandfather before his own father was born? Would he immediately cease to exist? Maybe he could return to the present, but not to when he left. Leather would have to be an alternative, parallel world. You know, there's quite a large collection of accounts of people who came from nowhere. People mysteriously disappeared, places that no longer exist but can be visited, and a defunct TV station that continued to broadcast odds, images, and signals. All these stories circulate around the concept of possible time travel. Then we've got teleportation that deals with individuals who experienced a sudden physical transport from one location to another. A slip in space that sometimes involved a slip in time as well. See, accounts of people who experienced strange anomalies and phenomena in highly charged areas of the Earth's ocean. Then we've got one interesting story we're going to be discussing was pilot Bruce Jernan's account of flying through a time warp or passing on the Bermuda Triangle. And then we've got this, of course, you can't talk about time travel without talking about the Philadelphia Experiment, one of the most controversial time travel episodes in history. It's the alleged disappearance and reappearance of a U.S. Navy ship, the USS Eldridge. It was part of a government experiment that went wrong. And this case has been validated by quite a number of researchers, though it's been debunked by others. Well, interestingly enough, trips to other dimensions through time travel or time slips, whatever you want to call it, are not always the result of just a few minutes. In October 1979, Lynn and Cynthia Gisby and their friends, Jeff and Pauline Simpson from Dover, England, decided to take a trip. They had no way of knowing precisely how far away they would be going. In fact, they were headed straight for one of the most baffling holidays of modern times. Now, Jeff Simpson was a railway worker, 44 at the time. His wife was 45 at the time, and she was a cleaner at the social club. And they were quite excited when Lynn and Cynthia Gisby invited them to go along on their holiday trip. The plan was to take the ferry across the English Channel and drive through France to northern Spain for 2 weeks of late summer sunshine. And all that did take place. The weather was fine. The ride through the strange countryside was packed with interest. But it didn't quite go as they planned. Well, we've come to the end of tonight's show. And we'll talk about the night they spend in another dimension in our next show. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.